You want some base for your papers?
Yeah. We're good. We're good.
You know what I can do? I can put it aside after for you.
Good. Thank you very much, Mufid, for that introduction. Of course, I have absolutely no idea what he actually said. Did he say nice things or mean things? It was nice? Okay, thank you then for that introduction. Yeah. All right, so it's really good to be here with you in Beirut. I was here 5 years ago, but now my wife got to come along. So tonight I've been asked to speak on the topic, the Bible, is it from God or from man? Okay, there we go. So there are many skeptics who say the Bible is just fables. A good friend of mine, his name is John Clayton. He was a very influential atheist. His parents were both atheist philosophers at Columbia University. And he was working for the leading atheist in America. And he was given a project to write a book. The title was this: The Bible, a book written by ignorant people. In an ignorant time. But in the process of doing his research, he became a Christian. I'll tell a story.
Go ahead.
But, okay.
I can handle it.
I was in a van with a bunch of other science professors. And one of the professors said this. She said, Christianity, what a stupid religion. I don't know how anybody could believe in that stuff. Especially a scientist. She said, did you know in the Bible it says this? If you wear clothing with more than one material, like cotton and linen, capital punishment.
Capital punishment.
Yeah, like you, death penalty. I said, excuse me, but the Bible doesn't say that. She says, yes, it does. I saw it at a website. Guess where she didn't see it? In the Bible. And I said, you know, people say the Bible has so many science errors in it. I've read it 5 or 6 times. I've never found a single science error. I don't know what they're talking about. It got really quiet in that van. And then I pulled out my Bible. Now, could you find that verse? The one in Leviticus that talks about clothing with more than one material? I knew it was in Leviticus on the right hand side, about halfway down. So I said a quick prayer and I read the verse. And it doesn't say that. You know, some of us are intimidated by these skeptics. They seem to think if you are really educated, obviously you reject the Bible. That's for ignorant people. But I reject that completely, and that's our topic tonight. So we're going to use the statement of an atheist as our outline tonight. Dallas McCown, he's an atheist biologist.
Dallas هو biology أو عالم ملحد.
He makes this statement that so many people would agree with. He says Christianity is scientifically unsupported.
It's written, so I'm not going to translate.
All right.
I'll save some.
And probably insupportable.
مكتوب. يعني يقرأ المكتوب.
Philosophically suspect at best, disreputable at worst, and historically fraudulent. Now, people say things like this. But I say, what's your basis for saying that? I have seen no science errors in the Bible at all. And the philosophy in the Bible is called Christian theology, is the greatest philosophy of all. So I'm going to talk about these things. Number one. People say, anybody who knows science, obviously they'd never be a Christian because there's so many science errors in the Bible. Here's my response to that. Show me one science error. I have a PhD in chemical physics. I've read the Bible through many times. I can't find these errors. Instead, I find things like this. Now, this is Papyrus Ebers. It is a document from ancient Egypt about 1500 BC. And it's a summary of the medical knowledge in Egypt at that time. And that's especially significant because Moses was in Egypt at about this time. Now let's look at some of the prescriptions in Papyrus Ebers. To prevent hair from becoming gray, use the blood of a calf boiled in oil and the fat of a rattlesnake. You need to start using that, Mufid. Yeah.
I think he should use it.
Yeah. No, he doesn't really need it.
It's gone.
It's all gone, yeah. Here's another one. A mixture of six fats. The horse, the hippo, crocodile, cat, snake, ibex to prevent hair loss.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Now, that's funny in a way. But really, it's tragic. Tragic.
Yeah.
Because in the ancient world, the average lifespan was about 20 years. Yeah, roughly 20 years, average lifespan. Because people died of infectious diseases. And they had no cures. Some of the medicines in Papyrus Ebers include the blood from a lizard. Pig teeth. Rotten meat. And even excrement. Yeah, it's right there. You don't even. Yeah. Even Even human excrement was used as medicine.
Wow.
That's quite amazing.
Thank God they don't use it.
Yeah. Now there's an interesting passage in Exodus chapter 15, verse 2.
في آية بخروج 15 عدد 2 ملفت للنظر.
God says to his people, if you will obey my commands, you will not have the diseases of the neighboring peoples. There is amazing scientific wisdom in the Old Testament. For example, you probably know certain kinds of meat were outlawed for the Jews. If you're curious, you can find the list in Leviticus 11. Beef, yes. Pig, no. Fish with scales, yes. Yeah. Mollusks like clams and oysters. No.
Okay.
Now, here's the fact. Every meat on the list that you could eat is relatively safe. And every meat on the list to not eat is relatively dangerous. The meat of pigs carries more than 20 different diseases. Now, with modern methods of sanitation, pork is more safe. But even then, you cook it all the way through. But beef is safe, even raw. I was in Venezuela a few years ago, and I ordered off the menu. I said, give me that one. They brought a whole plate of raw beef. I thought about Leviticus 11, and I ate it. Fish with scales, safe. We call it sushi. Right?
Yeah, sushi.
They have here?
Yes. Sushi. Yeah.
But every kind of shellfish is dangerous.
Like a sushi اللي هو مع انه ني بس من السمك اللي له خراشين.
And here's the point. All other ancient peoples ate these foods.
وكل الناس بالايام القديمه اكلوا من هاي المأكولات كلها.
And they died. But God's people avoided the dangerous foods and they lived. There are many other examples. For example, in Numbers chapter 9, there's a special law. Numbers chapter 19. It says, whoever touches a dead body will be unclean for 7 days.
It's translated.
Right. He must purify himself with water on the third and the seventh day, take some hyssop, dip it in the water, sprinkle the tent and the furnishings and the people who were there. Now, this law seems quite harsh. It means the people that are involved in cleaning the body for the funeral can't even attend the funeral. Why would God have such a law? Now, interestingly, the Bible never says why. It just says, do it. Now, this man is named Ignaz Semmelweis. He was working in a hospital in Vienna in the 1850s. In that hospital, 20% of the women who went into the hospital died in the hospital. Now, here's what the doctors would do. In the morning, they'd come in and examine the bodies of the women who died the day before. And then they go up onto the hospital ward and you know, treat the living patients. So Semmelweis said this: whoever touches a dead body is unclean. Clean yourself very thoroughly with soap and water. The death rate went down to 5%. Then he said, even if you touch a live body of a woman, wash your hands thoroughly with soap and water. Now, in Leviticus it says, when a woman gives birth, she's unclean. And when a woman has her period, she's unclean. Well, why would God say that? Because everyone knows God hates women. No, that's not why. Because when a woman gives birth or has her period, she's very susceptible to infection. And the death rate went down, it says 1%, it went down to 0.5%. Now, God didn't mention anything about bacteria. We know why a dead body is unclean, don't we? But God didn't say why. But when the Jews obeyed His commands, they had longer lives and they had less deaths. Now the prescription was water, ashes like from and hyssop. Yes, hyssop, yeah. Now, it just so happens that hyssop is a very oily plant. And if you mix the oil from the hyssop with the ash and the water, it makes soap. But hyssop has a very special property because 10% of the oil has this compound right here. Now, I teach organic chemistry. Has anybody here had organic chemistry?
Yeah.
And we call that a phenol, right? A phenol? Yeah. And when I teach about phenols in my organic chemistry class, I tell them this. One of their properties is they're not poisonous, but they kill bacteria. So God said, if you touch a dead body, you clean your whole body and everything you touch with a powerful antibacterial soap. You know that medicine smell in a hospital? It's thymol. So I see wisdom in God's prescriptions. Now, there are many other examples. I'm just going to cut out those examples. But God's prescription prevented leprosy. In the Old Testament, it says the life is in the blood. But Western medicine said you drain the blood when you're sick. Much scientific wisdom in the Bible. But here's one more example. It's in Genesis 17. The Bible says, on the eighth day, you circumcise all the male children.
Yeah, it's translated.
Yeah. So, two questions. Number one, why circumcision? And number two, why the eighth day? Now, in ancient times, most people died from infectious diseases. Usually bacteria or fungus. And where does bacteria and fungus grow? Where it's warm, dark, and wet. So what's the warmest, darkest, wettest place on a guy? Yes, everybody knows what we're talking about. How many lives were saved? By circumcision. And most of the lives saved were women, not men. Several studies have shown if a male has been circumcised, the spread of AIDS is 60% less. Now we know why the Jews were able to survive for so long despite persecutions. Because if they obeyed God's law, they had healthier lives and longer lives and had more children. But why the eighth day? Why not the first day? Or maybe the 12th day? Because you know the number 12 with the Jews, right? Now in all these laws, God doesn't say why. Here's what I learned. Even if you don't agree with the Bible, do what it says. You'll have spiritual health. But anyway, I think this is the reason. It turns out that vitamin K, you've heard of vitamin K, yes? It doesn't go from the mother to the child. And vitamin K is necessary for blood to clot.
Blood to
clot, you know, like you have the.
Vitamin K is very important to the blood.
Now, it's not actually the vitamin K that makes the blood clot. It's this protein right here. Prothrombin.
Okay.
Now, when a baby is born, they have no vitamin K. But then what happens is they eat from their mother. And they get bacteria. And it goes into the large intestine. And it forms vitamin K. And then prothrombin level starts to rise. So I'm going to show you a graph. Level of prothrombin versus number of days. And guess what the safest day to circumcise a male child is? From the day that male child is born to the day they die, guess what the safest day is to do a circumcision? Now you could say that's a coincidence. But they say, oh, the Bible is scientifically unsupportable. I say, you probably never read the Bible. Or you don't know what you're talking about. You know, in Hebrews 11, verse 3. It says, by faith we understand that the things that can be seen were created from one who is unseen. In other words, the Bible says the physical universe was created out of nothing.
العالم الجسدي أو الشيء اللي منشوفه فعلا خلق من لا شيء.
Yeah, we call that the Big Bang.
نحن بنسميه أو بيسموه البيج بانج.
There are many more examples.
في كتير أمثال غيره.
Now, the second thing our friend said is you can't trust the philosophy of the Bible.
الشغلة الثانية قال هيدا الفيلسوف الملحد إنك أنت ما فيك توثق بفلسفة الكتاب المقدس.
I'm going to skip that for now because that's tomorrow's lesson.
ما رح أحكي عنها اليوم لأنه هي موجودة بدرس بكرة.
So I'm going to get to the third thing that he said.
عشان هيك رح أروح للاقتراح الثاني.
He said Christianity is historically fraudulent.
المسيحية تاريخيا مخادعة أو مش دقيقة.
That's what these people say.
هيدا اللي بيقولوه ملحدين.
These stories were just made up.
هيدي قصص.
These Jewish teachers wrote down stories. Fables, just to get the children to obey them. Everybody knows there was no such person as David. Ah, Moses, they made all that up. And people believe this stuff. Until you start looking at the evidence. So let's look at some of the evidence. Now, there are the Hittites. If you don't know the Bible, the Hittites are mentioned a lot.
إذا ما بتعرف الكتاب المقدس الحثيين كتير مذكور عنهم بالكتاب المقدس.
47 times in the Old Testament the Hittites are mentioned.
47 مرة بالكتاب بالعهد القديم.
Now the skeptics said this.
والأشخاص اللي مشككين بيقولوا.
Hittites? There's no Hittites.
ما في حثيين شو
هالحثيين؟ These are just a bunch of stories.
هذه قصص خرافية.
Nobody could believe this stuff.
ما حدا بيقدر يصدق هيدا الشيء.
And then they found the capital of the Hittite Empire. It was a very large empire that covered most of what we'd call Turkey today. And also much of Syria. And here's the city gate of the capital of these people that supposedly... These people that supposedly didn't even exist. In fact, there are now universities where you can get a major in Hittite studies. So I think I believe in the Hittites. Now, this is one of these tablets from the city of Ebla. Ebla is in northeast Syria today. And they found tens of thousands of these little clay tablets. Some of the names found on these tablets include Nahor, Terug, Abram, and Sarai. These are names in the Old Testament. This city was around in Mesopotamia around the same time that Abraham was alive. Now skeptics say, oh no, there is no Abraham. Not a real person. Just a story they made up around 500 BC. But at 500 BC, none of these names even existed. If they're making up a story, how did they know about these names that didn't even exist? Here's another one. You read in Genesis chapter 14 that Abraham said to Lot, you go down to the Dead Sea. That's where all the good farmland is. I was there a few days ago. It's very desolate there.
It's very?
Very desolate.
It's
Now, according to Genesis, there were five large cities there. And there was a war. And the five cities, along with Abraham and Lot, fought a war against these other kings. You don't need to know the name. And of course, the critics of the Bible said, ha, 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 right, whatever. There were never any cities in that area. But then an archaeologist said, let's check and see what we can find. What they found is 2000 BC, the area was a little bit wetter than it is now. A little wetter, not a lot. But there were a number of streams that brought water down to the Dead Sea. They had intense agriculture and they had irrigation. Guess how many cities they found? 5 cities. All destroyed about 2000 BC. And never occupied again. One of them is almost certainly the city of Sodom, the largest of the five. About a kilometer from the city, they had a graveyard with wooden structures. And they were burned from the top to the bottom. Normally, when you burn something down, it burns from the bottom to the top. But these buildings were burned from the top to the bottom. You know what that implies? That fire fell from heaven. And people said, oh, the idea of the Jews coming from the desert to conquer Israel is ridiculous. This is just a fable. And then in the city of Tell El Amarna in Egypt, they found a bunch of letters. They were coming from rulers living in Palestine. Here's what one of them says. The Habiru plunder the land of the king.
Habiru, who's the Habiru, like the Jews?
I assume it's the Hebrews, yes.
It
doesn't say Hebrews, it says Habiru.
Okay? It's more Arabic.
Yeah, I guess so. I wouldn't know. They plunder the land of the king. If archers are here this year, then the land of the king, my lord, will remain. But if archers are not here, then the land of the king, my lord, are lost. Well, do you think the archers came in time? I don't think they did. You can read about that in the book of Joshua. So I believe the Habiru did come and conquer the land. This letter was written right around 1400
BC.
And they said, there was no such person as David, you know, killing Goliath, a nice story. But they said there is no evidence at all that David ever lived. Jan and I were in the city of Dan just a few days ago. It's near the Golan Heights, yes? In Dan, they found this inscription. It comes from the king of Aram. His name was Hazael.
His name is what?
Hazael. He said, I killed Joram, son of Omri. And I defeated Ahaziah of the house of David. So what that tells me is this, that there was a series of kings, and the first of them was David. And there was also the northern kingdom. Now, in this inscription, Hazael says, I killed Joram, son of Omri.
حزائيل قال أنا قتلت يورام ابن عمري.
Now if you read 2 Kings chapter 8,
وإذا بتقرأ ملوك الثاني إصحاح الثامن,
it says what actually happened.
بتقول حقيقة شو صار.
Is he injured Joram?
هو ما قتله, هو جرحه.
Joram left the scene of the battle.
هرب من المعركة جورام.
And Jehu killed Joram.
وجيهو هو اللي قتله.
Now let me ask a simple question.
خليني أسألك السؤال البسيط.
Which is more believable?
أي ممكن تصدقه أكثر.
This account?
هيدا التعليم أو هيدا الرسالة الموجودة.
Or the one in the Bible?
أو الموجودة بالكتاب المقدس.
That's an easy question.
هيدا سؤال سهل.
Because the Bible is the most accurate historical document of the ancient world by far.
لأن الكتاب المقدس هو أدق رسالة تاريخية موجودة من أيام وقت.
There are many chronicles from the ancient world.
في كتير قصص من العالم القديم.
These people never lost a battle.
هؤلاء الناس ما خسروا ولا معركة.
They only recorded their victories.
ما سجلوا إلا انتصاراتهم. بنشوف كل القصص القديمة.
The only exception.
الشيء الوحيد اللي كان مختلف.
The Bible.
كتاب المقدس.
There are a lot of defeats in the Bible.
كتاب المقدس ما كتب بس الانتصارات، كتب كمان الخسارات، كتب الحقيقة مثل ما هي.
Now the skeptics say, we can't believe all these kings. There are no carvings of any of these kings.
كلهم بيقولوا المشككين، احنا ما بنصدق على كل هاي الملوك لأنه ما في كتابات ولا رسومات ولا شيء عنهم.
How could we believe they lived?
كيف فينا نصدق انهم عاشوا؟
Well, there's a reason there were not carvings of these kings.
وفي أسباب ما كان في رسومات موجودة عن هذه الملوك.
Because God said, don't make an image.
لأنه الله طلب من شعبه ما تعملوا عنهم صورة أو تمثال.
But if you go to Nineveh,
لكن إذا بتروح على نينوى,
you can find the black obelisk of Shalmaneser.
بتشوف هذه هذا الحجر الأسود.
And it shows Jehu. There he is, Jehu. He's bowing down to Shalmaneser. So I believe there probably was a king named Jehu. And in 2 Kings 17 it says he paid tribute to Shalmaneser. So they say the Bible historically fraudulent. All right, do you have any examples? Here's another one. This is from the Assyrian king Sennacherib. He tells about a war that he waged against Judah. He says he conquered 50 towns, all the towns in Judah. And he says he surrounded the city of Jerusalem. And he says, I put Hezekiah in the city like a bird in a cage. In other words, I laid siege to Jerusalem. And then the story stops. Why do you think the story stops if you've read 2 Kings 18? Because we who read the Bible know what happened next. His entire army was destroyed. Does he mention that? This is the most powerful general in the world at that time. He surrounds a powerless Jerusalem. And then the story ends. I believe we have evidence for a biblical miracle here. I'm going to skip that one. I'll do two more. This one relates to Daniel chapter 5. In Daniel 5, you read about this man. His name is Belshazzar. And it tells how Belshazzar is having this party and they're getting drunk in the cups from the king, from the Jewish temple. And then there's the writing on the wall, right? And then Belshazzar says, whoever can interpret the writing, I'll give the third highest place in the kingdom. Now the skeptic said, this story is ridiculous. The whole idea of writing on the wall, what a joke. And besides, there was no king named Belshazzar. Herodotus, the greatest Greek historian, doesn't even mention Belshazzar. He says the last king of Babylon was Nabonidus. And all the historians agreed there was no Belshazzar. The last king was Nabonidus. And so obviously it's just a story. And then they found an inscription in the city of Ur. It explained what happened. Nabonidus killed the legitimate son of Nebuchadnezzar. And he became king. But he was not a legitimate king. But he married the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. And guess what his name was? Belshazzar. And Belshazzar was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. So he was a legitimate heir. So Nabonidus made him rule as a regent, you know, like a regent king. You know what that is?
Like an area, you mean?
It's a sort of a secondary king. And the chronicles say that Nabonidus, he went off into the desert to, you know, worship the moon god. Yeah, Nabonidus, he got into mysticism and he went off into the desert. So for 13 years, Belshazzar ruled as king. Now remember the story? He said, whoever can interpret the tablets of the writing on the wall will get the third place in the kingdom. Well, why the third place in the kingdom? Why not the second place in the kingdom? Because Belshazzar had the second place in the kingdom. I'm telling you, when it comes to history and archaeology, the Bible is always right. There are no errors in the Bible. So what do these skeptics do? Well, they say, all right, yeah, I guess there was David. But this isn't true. And then we find that one. And they say, well, you know, maybe I guess that's true too, but this other thing isn't true. And then we find evidence for that. You say, well, okay, that's true. But this thing isn't true. At some point, they should start to notice the Bible is the most accurate history book of the ancient world. The Bible is from God. not from man. You know, if the Bible was from man, then there'd be prescriptions like in the papyrus Ebers. If the Bible was written by man, there'd be only victories and no defeats. By the way, until not very long ago, they said there was no such person as Pontius Pilate. Not a real person. Now Luke says Pontius Pilate ruled in the time of Tiberius. And he was a proconsul.
It's
a proconsul, that's his position. And guess what they found in the city of Caesarea? An inscription. Pontius Pilate, procurator in the time of Tiberius. Okay, maybe there really was a Pontius Pilate. Maybe he really was procurator of Judea in the time of Tiberius. At some point, we might as well admit the Bible is just true. Okay, one more thing. You know, they say the Bible's full of contradictions. You've heard that, right? I mean, the Bible says one thing here and another thing over there. It's so confusing, nobody could believe any of this stuff. Now, I have a website, I've answered like, I don't know, 2,500 questions. The most common questions I get is, what about this contradiction? What about that contradiction? You can't believe the Bible because of all these hundreds of contradictions. Well, I've looked at about 400 or 500 of them. There are no contradictions. Just some examples. In Genesis
37,
it says the Amalekites. And in Genesis 39, it says the Midianites. It's about an event that happened. One place it says the Amalekites did it. Another place it says the Midianites did it. Which is it?
So, هل هو مين؟ هني أو هودي؟
The Midianites or the Amalekites?
هل هن المماليك أو المديانيين؟
The Bible is hopelessly contradictory.
والكتاب المقدس مناقض بناقض حاله.
Now I have a question.
عندي سؤال.
Are you Lebanese?
هل أنت لبناني؟
Or are you Beiruti?
أو أنت من بيروت؟
Which is it? Both. Exactly.
أنت اثنين.
Because the Amalekites were Midianites. There are so many examples of contradictions. For example, in Matthew 27:5, it says that Judas hanged himself. But in Acts 1:18, it says, no, his body fell down and it burst open. They can't both be true. Oh yes, they can. If Judas hanged himself and his body is hanging there for a day or two, what happens to a body that's been hanging for a couple of days? It starts to bloat. And then when it's cut down, it bursts open. Now, we'll do a question and answer session, maybe a little bit tonight. Probably not.
If they want.
All right. So, maybe you heard about some contradictions.
Okay, we can have a little time because we're going to have a long time on Sunday at 6.
Let me just do one more example. Now, some of these contradictions in the Bible, at first, it's like, yeah. That is confusing. For example, in Exodus 20, verse 4 through 5, it says, the sin of the father will be passed to the son down to the fourth generation. Says the sin of the father will be on the son and the grandson and the great-grandson. But in Ezekiel 18, it says the father is not responsible for the sin of the son. And the son is not responsible for the sin of the father. That kind of seems like a contradiction. Maybe they should have had a discussion before they wrote it down. But here's what I found. When you find what seems like it might be a contradiction, it's never a contradiction. In fact, it gives you deeper insight into the Bible. Because in Exodus, he's talking about the consequences in this life. If a man beats his wife, who suffers? The man? The wife? The children? The grandchildren? So when we sin, we bring suffering into this world and it affects our children. That's 100% true. And Ezekiel 18 is also 100% true. Look at the context. He's talking about the eternal consequences. That's the thing with all these contradictions. Just read the scripture. Because the fact is, on Judgment Day, the son is not responsible for the sin of the father, and the father is not responsible for the sin of the son. Now, and this weekend, we're going to look at more examples of why I believe the Bible is certainly inspired by God. But I say the Bible is written by God, not by man. Thanks for coming, and maybe we can have short question and answer.
إذا بتحب تضل معنا أهلا وسهلا فيك رح نعطي مجال بسيط لبعض الأسئلة إذا بتحب تسأل. We're done on time, but we will
perfect.
Open it a bit for some questions. All right. Thank you,
maybe just two or three questions.
And I just want to remind them, بدي أذكركم بس بكرة الساعة 7 رح يكون عندنا lecture بعنوان What is Truth بجامعة الشرق الأوسط, يعني بنفس هذه الطريقة جيت فيها لهون بس بتضلك مكفي لفوق وبتوصلك الطريق على جامعة الشرق الأوسط, ورح تكون الترجمة على الهيدسيت للي بده ترجمة يوم الأحد الساعة 10:30 الصبح بهيدا المكان. رح يكون عم يحكي عن the existence of Jesus, حقائق وجود الرب يسوع المسيح. والأحد الساعة 6 بهالمكان رح يكون حلقة نقاش, يعني حلقة أسئلة وأجوبة. حدا عنده أي سؤال قبل ما نترك هيدا المكان؟
Oh, we have a question. Good.
Hello, John. First of all, thank you so much for your hard work and everything that you explained.
شكرا لتعبك ولشرحك.
Just have one question about circumcision.
سؤال عن الختان.
We had some 4 months ago, but we didn't circumcise him because doctors said that the science nowadays is not encouraging that process.
إجينا ابن من شهر وما ختمناه. لأنه الدكاترة عم بيقولوا لنا العلم بهالأيام ما عم بيشجع هيدا الشيء.
But we really wanted to do it.
بس نحنا كان بدنا نخدمه.
But then again, they told us that because babies, when they're newborn, they're so prone to the pain of that process. So you better wait.
فقالوا لنا إنه الطفل اللي بيكون صغير بينوجع كتير أفضل تنتظر ليكبر شوي.
Until he's 1 year.
ليصير عمره سنة.
And then you can
ختان يعني تطهير بس لنوضحها.
Okay.
But then a lot of people also say, if God didn't want this extra skin, why did He create it anyway?
في كتير ناس بيقولوا إنه إذا الله ما كان بده هالزيادة الموجودة ليش خلقها؟
So it was kind of confusing, but it's not really known.
So هالموضوع شوي ضيعنا. شو رأيك؟
What would you say to people like that?
Okay, you asked about four or five different questions there. Okay, first of all, there's an anti-religious reaction. In our secular culture, they don't want to admit that maybe the Bible might actually be true. Now, this is a big thing in America, but apparently it's come here as well. That is just not true. It's biased. They don't notice, for example, the study about AIDS. Now, the medical advantage of circumcision today is much, much less than it was before. You guys, do you take a shower? Do you take a shower? Okay.
On holidays.
On holidays, yeah. But back then, they did not take a bath. And so the danger of having bacteria there was far, far greater. And yet there's a certain kind of cancer that is dramatically reduced by circumcision. You can guess which kind of cancer. And other diseases as well. It's just a fact that venereal diseases are spread less if men are circumcised. These people refuse to notice that. Now, I suppose it probably does hurt a baby to get circumcised. But there's a difference. See, when a child is born now, they give them a vitamin K shot. Within hours of birth, they give a vitamin K shot. So the whole eighth day thing doesn't really make medical sense anymore. But it just so happens, in that circumstance, in the Old Testament, that was the safest time to circumcise a child. This woman probably doesn't know any of these facts. You know, but then you asked another question. I've never really actually thought about that question, honestly. I mean, why do we have an appendix? Why do we even have a foreskin? Well, I actually believe in evolution. I believe evolution is part of God's plan on how to create different kinds of life. And so I really can't explain why we have an appendix. I'm not a biologist. But that's an organ that really doesn't have much use for us now. So I don't really have an answer to the question why, you know, we evolved to have a foreskin. I don't know the answer to that. Okay?
So should we all circumcise?
Like Abraham? In my opinion, circumcision or not circumcision, it's questionable.
Okay.
50-50. It's not a religious issue. The health benefits are less than they were back then. And if a man only has sexual relationships with one woman, which is what Christians do, then the health advantage is even less. Whether you do or you don't, I'd say I don't have an opinion. But the medical community is biased against Christianity. And against Judaism. So I think that's part of what's going on. Okay, maybe one or two more questions. Yeah.
David.
Hi.
Hello.
I just have a question. Now we proved lots of historical facts through the Bible and also from the archaeological side. But let's talk about the Genesis and the story of Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
Is there any proof that it really happened, or is it really a myth?
There is no evidence. I'm sorry. There's obviously no evidence for those two individuals, Adam and Eve. What evidence could you have? Maybe someone in a cave wrote, Adam and Eve slept here, or something like that. Now, I believe in Adam and Eve. You know why I believe in Adam and Eve? Because it's in the Bible. That's one thing we need to learn in our mind to be careful. Do I believe this because of the evidence? Or do I believe this because I believe the Bible is inspired? We'll never have proof that David killed Goliath with the slingshot, you know? Let me tell you some things I believe because of the evidence. I believe Jesus was raised from the dead because of the evidence. I believe the Bible is an accurate historical record because of the evidence. I believe the Bible is inspired by God because of the evidence. There is no evidence for heaven. The only reason I believe in heaven is because the Bible is inspired by God. And I have absolutely no evidence for Adam and Eve. But I believe it. Because Jesus believed in Adam and Eve. And Jesus walked on water, he raised Lazarus from the dead. He fulfilled all the prophecies. So I believe in Adam and Eve. I believe God created man in his image. Whether he just went like that, or whether he took an evolved creature and put his image in that person, I don't know, and it really doesn't matter to me. Okay? Okay.
And the secret was that they put something on it that has some kind of like anesthesia.
Okay, Banajou,
yeah.
And so this, and then he was like, he went like
in coma.
And so they called and said Jesus is dead for them to remove. And
yeah.
Then after they remove him and hide.
Yeah.
And
let me translate this.
This is what we
skeptical,
so this is what the one time someone told me.
Yeah.
We believe so, but actually it was like...
Yeah.
Okay, بعض الأشخاص مرة قالوا أو خبروني خبرية إنه يسوع موته وينتبه بين الأموات لأنه تلاميذه إنه كانوا عم يشربوه ماء كانوا عم يعطوه مخدر لينام وهو فعلا نام وراح بكوما ورجعوا بعدين وعي وقام من هيدي الكوما سو أنت شو رأيك فيها مين قال؟
Now I'm going to address this on Sunday in my lesson on Sunday.
راح أحكي هذا الشيء بدرسي عن يسوع specifically يوم الأحد.
basically, when it comes to the resurrection, there's only three explanations I've ever heard. They took his body away, or he never died, or he was raised from the dead. The took his body away idea is crazy, but that's not the one you're asking about. The other theory is he didn't really die. Now here's why that doesn't really make much sense. First of all, Jesus was beaten to the point he might have died anyway. No water for 3 days. He was crucified. And he died. Now, when somebody dies when they're crucified, it's not hard to figure it out. Because when you're crucified, you have to push up. Otherwise, you suffocate. If you let go, you suffocate within 2 or 3 minutes. So as soon as somebody becomes limp, even if they weren't dead already, they'd be dead within 2 or 3 minutes. Now, the Roman soldiers knew a lot about crucifixion. They know when somebody's dead. Anyway, he was dead. But we know from the gospel record is it was the night before the Passover. So they wanted to end the crucifixions. They broke the legs of the two thieves. They can't push up. They'll be dead within 2 or 3 minutes. You can't fake that. Having some anesthesia on your lips would not change that. But Jesus was already dead. How do we know that? Well, they put a spear up into his side. And John tells us that blood was separated from water. And it's a medical fact that the plasma separates from the other blood cells about an hour or two after you die. So Jesus was beaten to the point of death, crucified, he's dead, hanging limp, and then they gave him a wound with a spear that would have killed him anyway. And then according to this theory, he's in the tomb. He wakes up, shakes himself off, moves the massive stone away, and then he must have punched all the soldiers and give them a kick or something like that. This idea is absolutely absurd. No person with an ounce of common sense would believe it. Anyway, I'd like to do more, but I think...
We're fine.
Yeah,
we're done.
Okay, we're done. We'll do more questions later. Thank you.
Oh my God, this translation is so
bad. That's a tough one, huh?
It's good I wrote them.
Yeah.
It saved me a lot.
Yeah.
I should do the one tomorrow.
Yeah. That one's even harder. Because luckily, Sunday's not hard.
Today we have about 20 visitors.
There's a lot of people.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Amazing. I have a lot of questions.
Great.
I'll ask you later, not today.
Yeah. We can do questions as long as you want. I mean, we just need to let people go.
We'll have time later on Sunday to ask.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we're going out to dinner. Maybe come along. Hi.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I just want to say
hello.
I would like to say hello.
Hi. And then thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Wonderful, wonderful job.
Thank you. Thank you.
I am from the United States. I am here as a visit to my daughter now.
You live in the U.S.?
Yes.
Okay, where do you
Texas.
Live?
In Texas.
Where in Texas?
El Paso.
Okay, yeah.
Do you know El Paso?
Of course.
Oh, yeah? Very good. So we have a people there. My husband was from Lutheran Church. Lutheran.
Uh-huh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but I am a Catholic.
Good.
I don't worry. I am Christian, but very Christian. I like very much what you say.
Thank you.
About Jesus. And I appreciate God. In that world, have people, have faith, deep faith like you have.
Thank you.
That is a big blessing from God.
So you're here from El Paso?
Yes.
I've been in El Paso a few times.
Oh, really? What you did there?
Just driving through. Yes. My daughter and son-in-law live in New Mexico.
Oh, really? And
yes.
How are they doing?
They're doing fine.
Is okay there?
Sure.
Where? In Mexico, Mexico?
New Mexico.
And in New Mexico.
Yeah.
It's very
and
near
El Paso is almost in, yeah, yeah.
It's 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Less than 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Very good. Very good. I'm very happy to know you. Okay? Let's see. Maybe we come again on Sunday.
Good.
Okay.
All right. See you then.
Okay.